Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael, and today we welcome back to the show Sandra Inman. She's a practicing Wiccan for over 30 years and the founder of Mystery Witch School. Today she's going to share her knowledge and experience about a very popular and important topic in magic, which is prosperity magic. But before we get started, Michael has a few announcements.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our show and happy to be back after COVID. So if you haven't got it, don't. It's not a lot of fun. But I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be healthy. We've got some great shows coming up. Next week, we have our good friend Ray Davis, and he has started a new YouTube project called High Vibe Saturdays. We're going to talk about raising vibration with music and other things. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then at the end of the month, we have our good friend, Reverend Jim McGrath, coming back to talk about King Solomon and who was this dude and why do we associate him with so much ceremonial magic and so forth. So that's going to be great. And then we're planning all kinds of cool things over the summer. So some two-hour specials on magic and UFOs and all kinds of neat things. So get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-I-X-T-H, all spelled out. And while you're there, if you can afford to, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi. Helps us cover a little of our costs, and we appreciate that. But the best thing you guys can do is click like and subscribe and just help our channel grow and pass the word. And we love seeing all of that, and we love all of you guys for tuning in. So don't want to take up any more time because we got so much ground to cover today, and Sandra's just such an amazing guest. So with that, I'm going to kick it back to you. So take it away, Krista.
Great. Thank you, Michael, and welcome, Sandra.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
So, let's get started. I mean, this is such a cool topic in many ways because it has so many branches you can go off into, and it is very important. One thing that I would say I like about magic, and one of the things that drew me in, was I felt like it cares about my life on Earth, you know, especially witchcraft. Like, it's okay to want to have prosperity and comfort, and then there's some spiritual traditions that, they just don't see it as a priority.
That's right. And some of them even disdain it.
Yeah.
And which I think is really unhealthy and puts people into a poverty cycle, which isn't what we're here to be in. It's nothing spiritual about being poor. It's got nothing to do with spirituality.
So when we talk about the topic of prosperity, what does that mean to you in general in terms of philosophically?
Prosperity to me is really about having an abundance of what it is that you need and desire to have. So it's there when you need it and you can access it. So that can mean different things to different people, and it can mean different things to different times of your life. So it's really, I think, an individual thing. It's not something that you could say, oh, prosperity is this figure, or you need to have this many assets or whatever to be prosperous. It's that feeling of I can have and do what I need to do and desire to do pretty much easily and with little effort in some ways.
I like that. I think that's really true because, I mean, like anything else in witchcraft that's become popular, it seems be that most people associate it initially with money, which of course is important, but isn't the only way to have prosperity.
That's right. Prosperity can be in what you have around you in regards to emotional prosperity. You can have health is, of course, your greatest asset. And I think it's too, it's that mindset, it's the psychological prosperity of feeling the happiness and the joy, feeling that sense of confidence that you can just put your needs out there, your desires out there, and relax about it and allow them to come to you when it's time for it to come. It's not like you have to have a whole lot of money in the bank or a whole lot of assets necessarily to be able to dip into the universal bank. That's something that I've had to learn, and it's not an easy thing to learn. But knowing that with magic and the practice of understanding, putting the will out, and then the passive side of surrendering, you can just know that the universe does have your back without you necessarily needing to have the physical stuff already there in escrow in the bank or in assets.
So what would you suggest if somebody was just getting into the idea of doing some kind of a working with prosperity? Where would you suggest they start, or how would they start?
It, with the clarity of what prosperity means to them, why are they doing it in the first place? So what's the motivation for doing the prosperity magic? Is it a short-term thing? Is it just to bring in a couple of $1,000 to pay some bills or something? Is it because you want to increase your income? Is it because you want to use that money to buy maybe a larger asset? Or are you wanting to accumulate wealth, literally accumulate assets and wealth? It's having that clarity is the first thing. A lot of people don't know really what they want in the long term in regards to money, because we're not educated with regard to money. School totally neglects money or financial education. And so most of us don't know anything about how to have a wealth mindset, or even how to become wealthy if that's the goal you want, you know, to become, you know, somebody who has like a seven-figure business or something like that, that's often pushed out there in the online business world. Really don't understand what that actually even means. And do you even need that? Like, to be prosperous, you may not even need that sort of wealth. It's really knowing what suits you and how you're comfortable working your own. So get clear first about what it is you want.
And what would you suggest for people? Because as a tarot card reader, I do find one of the issues that people come to me with is figuring out what they really want. And maybe it comes down initially with a specific situation, but then when you start talking to them, you see the root of the issue is that confusion, this lack of clarity. So what kind of suggestions do you make for people that are unclear about their own true desires and not what's been kind of laid on them by society or parents or, you know, other people?
There's a series of questions that I use in most of my courses. I think it's particularly in the witchcraft courses that I do. And that's just this simple process of questioning what it is that... So in regards to prosperity, what is it that I want? And to just spend maybe 5 minutes writing down in a style of writing without lifting your pen off paper. And writing is better than typing. So it's really good to get that physical kinesthetic action happening, because it connects with the body and the subconscious mind. And just write down what comes to mind. And then after you've written that, then you ask yourself the question again, what is it that I really want? And then you go further, then ask the question again, what is it that I really, really want? And go further again. And then at the end, you can go, if I had all of the wealth in the world, if I had all of the knowledge that everything I did was going to be successful, I've got all the health and the love, what is it that I really, 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 really want? And then go into it that way. And each one of those layers reveals what's on the surface, and then the next layer down and the next layer down, and then till you get to the whole root of what it is you truly, truly want. And that can be quite revealing, because you may think, okay, I want the money for maybe a short-term gain, but what is it that you really want the wealth for? And that helps also bring up the important aspects of any magic, is that you've got to have that emotional connection to the goal. And so by going into all of those layers of want, you can start to realize that at the end of the day, it's probably all coming down to feeling a particular way. And when you get that feeling, then you can go from there.
So that's a good point. Feeling is a very important aspect to magic. And in some forms of visualization, they suggest that you feel what it's going to be like when you get what you want. But my question is, and what I struggle with, is what if it's an experience you've never felt? I mean, there are people, for instance, now maybe I've always had food no matter what. But what if I'd grown up in a home where we didn't have a lot of food sometimes, so I never knew what it felt like to have food and not worry about it? So I understand the reasoning of it, but it seems like if you've not felt it before, should you pretend to feel it, or just what would you suggest people do?
It's kind of a practice makes perfect thing. It's kind of like you've got to practice what it would be like to feel into the wish fulfilled. And that can take a long time because there can be a lot of negative beliefs that you have about yourself and the world that can jump in and sabotage that feeling. And it's something you've got to learn to feel by imagining if you were in that situation. Like if it is, say, you want a particular, to live in a particular area in a particular type of home, what would it feel like to be in that home and really feel into that feeling and practice that on a regular basis so that you're practicing the feeling of the wish fulfilled rather than just expecting that you're going to automatically feel into it, because the subconscious mind with its past programming is probably going to say, there's no way that could ever happen to you. You're not the sort of person that could have that. You're not good enough to have that. What will people say if you have that? Who's going to get offended? All of those negative self-talk will come in. And so by practicing feeling into it, not only do you hear your negative self-talk so you can do the shadow work around that, you're also learning how to feel what a person who lives in that kind of home feels like. So it's a practice thing. It's hard to do, but it just requires discipline like everything else in magic.
So I've also run across the concept, I forget where I ran across it, of making a list of what you don't want. And in this particular thing, it was to make a list, and I think you kind of put it on your altar, of the things that you don't want. And there's definitely this view in certain parts of magic that you don't use the word no or don't, that the subconscious mind doesn't understand that. And what is your position on that idea?
It seems from what I know of the subconscious mind that it doesn't understand the negative. But at the same time, we're programmed to focus on the negative. We're actually biologically programmed to focus on the possible dangers, which makes sense from a survival point of view. So it's a case of re-educating the subconscious mind, I think. I think it's a good idea sometimes to work with both, because you do need to know what you don't want in order to know what you do want. And sometimes putting out there what you don't want and then casting it off, like through like a petition or burning it off, is a way of giving it up to the universe. And then you can then have room then to focus on what it is that you do want. So that is an aspect. I know that in one of the meditations that Joe Dispenza does, if anybody's familiar with the work of Joe Dispenza, is that he offers up the negative stuff to whatever the higher power or whatever it is that individual people connect with. And then after you've offered it up, then you can start to bring in the feeling of being the person who has whatever it is that you're wanting, whether that's health, being healthy, or whether that is prosperity or love.
Now, one of the things I've noticed in passing is in the popular witch world, there seems to be a belief that if you don't have money or success, you are not magically powerful. And I thought about so many examples of how that's wrong. But what happened, it was actually a really good experience, because I started thinking about something I have that I really wanted before I got into magic, and that's time to read and do things I want to do. I've had that for years, and I really wanted to have that in my life. And I said, that was a magical act I didn't even realize I was doing, because I was, Mike and I both were sort of like blue collar workers. I would work sometimes two jobs, and, you know, just even stepping away from a regular income was really frightening at first. And now I just think I could never do that again. But it, I do remember, you know, thinking that and putting that on a little list of time, wanting to have time that I had control over to read and do the things I wanted to do. And so I thought about that and I said, well, that's people, like you say, they have different desires. And that, you know, to me is more important, because you're going to feel happy then if you get something you want. But there, I mean, does that seem to be somewhat, at least the popular, you know, it seems like to me a little bit, at least over the last 10 years, that's become a little sign that somehow you're a powerful witch if you can, you know, manifest fame and fortune. And I don't know, it sort of seems kind of trite in a way.
I think there's all these rules that people put on us. you can't be a witch if you do this, you can't be a witch if you do that, but to be a witch you have to do this, that, and the other. I think it's just part of the whole naive ego trip. And witchcraft has always been associated with certain powers. You know, I have people emailing me wanting to have witch powers. and it's like, well, actually everybody has this ability. It's not like it's special powers or anything. You've just got to learn how to use it. I think it's, again, it's maybe some people want fame and so they will do magic for fame and they'll get fame, but not everybody wants to be famous. I think most people probably would prefer not to be famous, and it's really about focusing on what you want. Not every witch wants to be rich and famous in that material sense. There's other ways of living a prosperous life without having to be a billionaire. You can, like you said, to you time was really important, and time to me has always been more important to me than money. So I've always led a life where time took priority. So as a result of that, I've often sacrificed money in order to have the time, yet I've always had what I've needed from a material point of view and financial point of view when I've needed it. So it's understanding what's really important to you. And I think for most of us, it is actually time. I think we really do value our time to read, to learn, to do the things that we want to do. And I feel that that's what we're here really to do. And because we've got this sort of financial setup where people are programmed to trade time for money, that we end up in this really nasty cycle of not having any time and feeling that we have to sacrifice it for money. So there's always this duality between time and money. So using magic to find a way to have both is a good place to start.
It's true. The more I think about it, you're absolutely right. Because I do know people that have financial success, but they don't have the time to do some of the things they really want to do. And they're planning on doing that at some point, which I don't know, in my mind, you know, I could be dead tomorrow. So I try not to put off things too much because of that concept, which I was, you know, I kind of learned the hard way when I was younger. So, you know, I don't want to waste time or but obviously sometimes you have to survive and you have to do certain things maybe, but at the same time, you can still try to inch your way back to, okay, this is what I really want. And as long as you're still kind of doing that, you're really still working the magic. Another thing I thought about when I was getting ready for the show was when I think about prosperity spells, like let's say I do need some income, especially during the pandemic, I probably went back to specific spells during the pandemic, and I found they really helped. And I looked for really simple ones, like I found one where you put a bay leaf in your wallet, and I don't know, they worked. And I don't know if it's just because I was desperate too, and my mind was like really focused, but I found like little quick things during a crisis have been helpful to me when I did need some cash and it was something I didn't have control over. You know, I certainly did not alone make a pandemic. So, you know, I don't have that kind of an ego. So do you have any like suggestions for things like that?
Well, like you said, sometimes those really quick, simple spells are the best to do in that situation. I don't think magic has to be complex in order to work. Well, we know from even the intention experiments of Lynn McTaggart and even Joe Dispenza, that they're just using intention and visualization. They're not even using magic in the traditional sense of using correspondences and everything. And they're getting results. So, and they're documented and they're treating it the same way you would treat a scientific experiment, and they're getting very positive results from that. So I think that keep it simple is really the best way, particularly if, for me, I found that doing magic on the fly has always been more successful than really well-planned magic for me. I don't know why that is. It just seems to be something that works better for me if I just do it on the fly. I think it's because when I do it on the fly, it's easier for me to let it go. Whereas right. if I've spent a lot of time planning something, it's becomes almost harder to let it go because I put so much effort into planning it. So those quick things like the bay leaf in the wallet are really great things to do. I've found those to be quite helpful to bring in, you know, small amounts of cash, not right. necessarily a fortune, but it will bring in extra. Yeah.
And that was my follow-up thought, was I was thinking about, what kind of magic does one do to maintain what you have and or protect what you have? I actually never thought about it until this show. It's like, huh, I never even thought about that aspect until now. So already you've helped me, you know?
Yeah, protection magic for your income, absolutely. You know, if you've got a business, protection magic for business, giving it a good sweep. And doing uncrossings regularly, or even curse removals regularly, just to try and keep things flowing on that business level or on that income level, is just part of that protection magic.
Now, I do remember once I loved the evil eye and the Hamsa decorations. And I particularly like ones that are from Turkey. The ones, they're ceramic and they have beautiful, like, rope. And I mean, I never really appreciated their power until I bought one to put above my door. And I said, oh, this is so pretty. I'm going to put it there, you know, mostly because I love it. And that weekend, our business tripled. And I was like, oh, my God, we have some I don't think it was a deliberate. I don't think we have deliberate energy come at us, but unconsciously we must have had something coming at us. And I think anyone that does metaphysical work probably has something, even if it's just a passing person that doesn't like what you do and they kind of send it to you. Ever since then, I try to do something simple, like you said, to cleanse it. But I think I've been neglecting that part, actually. I'll have to go back, but that made me realize that, wow, some of these symbols really work. Some of these amulets really work, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of symbolism in Arabic magic or Persian magic in that case. Yeah, it's because you are, if you're in the public, and if particularly if you're in the metaphysical business, there are going to be people out there who aren't happy with what you do. They don't like the way you teach, or they don't like, you know, something about you. And so they'll either intentionally or unintentionally be throwing stuff your way. And so you do have to regularly, I think, protect yourself from any of that on a regular basis. That's something that I've learned to do.
Now, what kind of things do you like to do? Do you like baths? Do you do candles for the protection side of prosperity?
I do. There's an uncrossing that I do where I just basically write down my name, the name of the business, the name of my YouTube channel, and I just use a curse removal oil or an uncrossing oil. And I just, so for anything like uncrossing, I'll just put a symbol there. So if I'm wanting to remove any blocks, for example, I'll just put a Saturnian symbol there and sort of then cross through that so that I'm sort of cancelling Saturn's energies of restriction. I like to still work with cash. I know that the governments want to abolish cash and everything, but cash is such a great thing to work with magic, because it's a physical, tangible thing and you can anoint your money with magic oils. So I like to anoint my money with my magical name that's I've got in a symbol form. And also to maybe put some Jupiter symbols there and some Venusian symbols on there, just with a light oil on the money and say, you know, this comes back to me, you know, tenfold or something. And whenever I spend it, also say whatever I spend comes back to me. So just always doing little bits and pieces of magic all the time to just, it just basically keeps it coming. And you don't know really where the magic's going to come, money is going to come from.
Mm.
Like it could come in bulk. It could come in, you know, like you said on that weekend, the business tripled. It can come from various different places and you just never know where it's going to come from.
That's interesting too, because it's like then you're building a relationship with prosperity.
Mm.
And it's like anything else, you have to take care of the relationship, which every now and then I think, and maybe I need to change my view a little bit of doing money spells. Because when I first started, we were really broke. And so I really did more money instead of prosperity spells. And so I kind of got caught in that idea. And of course, that's a little that's a little hard to keep maintaining just that instead of the idea of abundance and prosperity, because you can approach it from so many different ways like you did. I love the cash thing. I agree with you, working with money. Now, some people, we've talked in the past, witches, they have a special altar for prosperity. Do you have something on your altar? Do you have or sometimes a special bank or a box or anything like that?
I have a box, so I use a box that's got different herbs in it, like cinnamon, and there's nutmeg and there's bay leaves in there. And I put in coins and sometimes paper money in there. And I'll periodically just take the coins out and go and spend them if I go and buy coffee or something like that. So it might be small amounts of money, but I find that what money likes to move, so you've got to keep it circulating. And that's one of the reasons why I prefer to work with cash, because it is physically circulating. It's not like currency in cyberland, which is sort of harder to work with in a way. The physical cash moving it tends to then somehow influence the cyber cash to come in as well. So it's like being able to have something tangible and physical to put out there and get out there and having move around. And it doesn't have to be huge amounts of money. It can be, you know, $4.50 for a cup of coffee.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't have to be a lot to have an effect on things.
We have a really cool spell that we've been doing for, since we've been in LA almost. And it started out, it was really cool that we were just landing here and we were just getting on our feet and finances were tight. And Krista one day, we live near Venice Boardwalk, she said, wouldn't it be great to have an extra $100? I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. So she was going out for a walk and she comes back a little bit later and she said, is this real? And it was an American $100 bill. And she was walking along the boardwalk and it was crumpled up on the boardwalk and people were stepping over it. And she just bent down and picked it up and brought it home. And so what we did was we have this little puppet character that we call Scratches. And we decided rather than spend it, that we would keep it as the basis of a prosperity spell. So we put a little mark on it. We gave it to Scratches to hold on to. And Scratches has become our banker, basically. And so whenever we have someone who maybe does something generous and tips us a little extra, we give Scratches a little bit extra. Our friends that know about it have brought, you know, foreign currency when they're on trips. We've gotten Mardi Gras coins that have gone in there, all kinds of stuff. But and it seems like he's been a real prosperity working that we've been doing for 25 years. It's always kind of had our back. But it was a neat little way of just kind of saying, okay, rather than just rush out to spend this, it was the beginning of something good. Let me use that as a basis for a spell to make it even better. And it's worked really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit like having, in a way, a servitor.
Yeah, it's true.
to help with that side of things. Or, yeah, having the money tree, the money box, where you're feeding it, and also then utilizing it as well. Yeah.
And I think it's also that element of play, which seems to be very important in all kinds of magic, is something that is something, even if it's like a heavy issue, that element of play helps me, you know, to lighten it up and release it in a way, like you said, that you can let it go, which does seem to be one of the hardest aspects of magic, is sort of letting it go and letting it come back the way it wants to and when it wants to.
Yeah, that's definitely the hardest part. And that's the receptive side of it. It's Magic isn't all. It's that balance between the yin and yang and that whole active passive thing. It's you've got to you put it out there actively, but you've got to actually allow yourself to be open to receive it and surrender to how it's going to happen. And we're not used to doing that because we live in such a world of do, 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 do. To be able to trust that the magic is working and that it's going to happen, however, is a really, it is hard. It's hard to trust. It's very hard to trust.
Yeah, even when I've seen it work, I'm still, I just feel like I'm undoing a lot of programming that is, like you said, because I'm born into a Western society and we are definitely taught to be productive and to do. And I'm not against that completely because some people don't do any of that. But the idea that we have to learn that sort of, you know, yin sign and allowing things to happen, unfold. And sometimes it happens in such beautiful ways too that you don't expect. You're like, wow, I didn't see it coming that way. So that's the part I like too about when you learn to do that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the problem is, of course, our programming. And if we are learning to surrender to it coming, what are the beliefs that are stopping us from feeling that we can surrender to it coming? I recently did a tapping video on my tapping channel on God doesn't want me to be wealthy or God doesn't want me to be prosperous, because this is a belief that I had that, you know, the universe, God and goddess didn't want me to have a lot of money, because if I did, then I wouldn't be motivated to do what I do. And then after doing a lot of tapping and a lot of work on that, I realized, well, the reason I do what I do is because I'm creative and I like to create, and I have to always be doing something. So it's not the money that I'm doing it for. It's because it's the joy of creating. And so I wouldn't necessarily need to be motivated by money in order to do anything. And the truth is, the gods don't give a hoot about how much money I make anyway. It's not about that to them. It's about me doing what I am here to do, however I do it. So I realized I was the one that had that belief, and that belief was a false belief. So I had to do a lot of work around that. And I think a lot of people in the spiritual community possibly have that belief, because it is a belief in the spiritual community that I had a woman even say that it's against Wicca to want prosperity.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, well, where did you get that crap from?
Especially Wicca, because that doesn't seem to be true at all. And I mean, that, again, why I was drawn to even witchcraft was the idea that you could be sexual, you could have money, you could, there are a few other religions that allow it, but not a lot, like you said, that it's okay. Wow, I hadn't heard that one from Wiccan. That's a hard one.
That is, and I didn't hear that from the very beginnings of my days in covens either. But I think the problem with some branches of Wicca, or maybe some newer ideas of Wicca, is it's taken on some of the Christian concepts and New Age concepts and a lot of stuff that doesn't actually belong to it. And it's all been sort of put into, oh, this is what it is, when it never was that in the first place.
Well, at least in the Western societies, we have to realize we live in a Judeo-Christian structure, and we all I wasn't even brought up in any religion, and I have some of the concepts. My parents left. My father left the Judaism. My mom left Catholic. They both didn't believe in religion, and though my dad's super metaphysical, and they had bad experiences in it, and they didn't raise us anything except for to be good people and ethics and kindness and, you know, treat people well. But I still have some of those, and maybe it's karmic, but I also think living in this culture, you have those Judeo-Christian beliefs. If you don't recognize it, you will bring it into wherever you go. You say, oh yeah, you know, like the idea of never harming someone, that's not in witchcraft. I mean, it's just not. There's plenty of proof that in a lot of witchcraft, you can harm people. And recently, I even discovered in some of the old Buddhist texts on Tara, very ancient ones, there was circle, there was like this a couple tars that will kill. I was like, holy cow. I mean,
oh, yeah. Yeah. The magic in Buddhism is, it could be scary to New Age Buddhists.
Yeah. So I'm not saying I'm going to go and embrace it, but it's a little more complicated. And they're not just saying randomly, they're talking about probably the most extreme reason why you would kill, to protect groups of people or whatever it is, you know. But I know with, again, with a lot of witchcraft, self-defense is okay. If someone's, you know, going to come after you, it's okay to defend yourself. You don't have to turn the other cheek.
Of course. And that's the whole thing with martial arts too, is learning is about defending yourself. And that comes out of a very Taoist and Buddhist paradigm. So it is about understanding that a lot of this don't cause any harm stuff is a very, I think a lot of it sort of has come out of the New Age version of Eastern traditions, because a lot of that Eastern information that we get anyway in the West is all about being anti-materialistic, you know, not wanting money, not wanting prosperity. So a lot of that's an Eastern influence. But that's coming, it's, you've got to understand the context of giving up the need for material things. You have to be in an environment where that's conducive to you doing so, which isn't the Western culture. We can't just go to a mountain and live, you know, off the land in the West. It's some people can do it, but it, not everybody's cut out for it. And I don't think that's our path. Nothing would happen if we all became gurus sitting on a mountain. There, nothing would happen in the world.
Yeah, there's it's different lives for different kinds of people. Now, I have been thinking about this materialism idea for a while, because that plays into problems with prosperity. And one is like when Blavatsky and Crowley and D.N. Fortune, when they were talking about materialism, what they meant was people were forgetting about the metaphysical spiritual side, that we were seeing things, the mechanics of the universe, and saying that's all there is. So really, materialism from an occult point of view is about that. It's not about having money or not having money, but just that whole, there's more to reality than the material. And it finally dawned on me, that's why there was so against certain things, because you have to put them into their society, where that was a real issue, where it is like kind of the same issue now, even that in spite of, well, maybe not because of physics, we are starting to see the universe is really likely to be quite different than just the mechanism, though there's plenty of people in science that will say, no, we're still a materialistic being, and when we die, you know. But I think that's what materialism is about. It's not about money. It's about that, you know, and that if you see certain books, why they fight against it, that's what they're really talking about.
Yeah, that's right. The materialist ideology is that this, what we can see, touch, taste, hear, and smell is all there is. There is no other reality other than that. I think that's even the classical meaning of the word materialism. I think people got caught up in materialism meaning owning things or wanting to accumulate stuff. And whilst that in and of itself isn't the answer to happiness either, it's not that you've got to then do the opposite. I think the problem with humans is that we go from one extreme to the other. We're always operating on this pendulum of extreme. So when it comes to the principle of rhythm, we're always swinging from one end to the other extremely. We don't understand that it's actually about trying to maintain a middle way, like a balance between the two. So yes, you need to have material items. You need to have a certain amount of ability to have the things that you want to have and do. So yes, you in the Western world, you need money to do that. And it's okay to want those things. It's not like the universe doesn't give a hoot whether you have whether you're a billionaire or whether you have zero in the bank. It really doesn't it doesn't care, and you're not going to be judged by anyone out there either way. It's what's your motivation for having these things? What are you doing with these things? And, you know, is it part of your path to have these things? Because some people who have a really big purpose, who want to really maybe do some really big things out in the world will need a lot of money behind them to do those things, mm-hmm. whereas other people might not need so much to do what they came here to do. So we can't judge people based on what it is that they have because we don't really know what their purpose is for having it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And the idea that some people need more resources, what I find interesting is sometimes that happens to people accidentally, that they're doing their purpose with complete devotion and they get this tremendous support. And I'm not saying that you can't ask for support, but I'm always kind of fascinated by when that happens, like just, wow, that's really kind of cool. And I also feel like, you know, Dolly Parton's really a good example of someone that gives like in really powerful ways because she's really into, you know, the whole, she does that whole thing with the books, how many books that she's given away and she's given back to her community when they all lost homes and fires. And she's using so much of her resources to do these really wonderful things. And I don't, you know, she just remembered her roots, but there are people like that you kind of see and you're like, wow, that is so cool. I mean, you kind of find yourself rooting for people like her, whereas, you know, there are people that are billionaires that are destroying our world and you're not exactly rooting for them.
Yeah. Some psychopath billionaires out there.
Exactly. And are they really prosperous? You have to ask if they are they a representation of prosperity if they're destroying so much along the way?
Well, I guess they are prosperous in the material sense, but their prosperity, I mean, prosperity in and of itself is neutral anyway. I don't think the universe is there going, well, you deserve to have that and you don't deserve to have that. I think that's another misunderstanding of spirituality. It's really about us saying we don't deserve it for whatever reason. The universe, as I said, I really feel from my own experience, it doesn't give a hoot. It's more about it opens up when you open up. So when you change your mindset around money and you realize that you have a right to have it as much as anybody else does, then you know, the universe is quite happy to then provide it for you. It's we're the ones that are in the way of our own prosperity. And a lot of work around prosperity, if it's an area that people struggle in the most, can be a real learning opportunity about what we do believe about ourselves and the world. And when you go down the rabbit hole of shadow work around money and prosperity, you find that it's not just money related, that there's other beliefs there that are more to do with your value, the value of your time, the value of what it is that you can do and not valuing yourself. It can be around being afraid of being maybe out there more in the world and worrying about what other people are going to say or what other people are going to think. And that's often holding people back from prosperity. So it's not necessarily their mindset around money itself. It's about what they might have to do in order to attract the prosperity. Like maybe they need to be out there more in the world doing something, but they're being held back from doing it. And that's actually what's stopping the money from coming.
That's an interesting one. And that one too can also be puzzling because let's say you're an introvert, and that is your natural ability, and that's your natural being. And do you work with the idea of being out there some of the time and then recovering, or do you find ways to be prosperous that allow you to remain an introvert? This is just a question. I don't know the answer.
It's interesting because the majority of entrepreneurs, particularly the online entrepreneurs, are introverts. So the online world gives introverts a great opportunity, I think, because we can sort of choose when we're out there. We don't have to actually go physically out there to network and then be exhausted. We can do what we need to do on social media and be out there, and then we're once the camera's off and the microphone's off, we're back in our own introvert world. And a lot of successful entrepreneurs that I've listened to, that's what they do. They actually spend most of their time by themselves. It's just that they're out there, they're doing maybe podcasts and YouTube videos and social media. And of course, they've got teams of VAs who can, you know, help with all of that stuff.
Right.
Meanwhile, they're behind the computer typing away, doing their latest course or something, or reading a book or something like that. So I think for introverts, it's finding a way of earning money that's conducive to our need to have a lot of time to recover by ourselves. And that's where the time thing comes in, I think. We introverts really value our time, and particularly our alone time and our focus time on learning and experiencing and pondering and doing all those sort of introvert things. And it's finding a way of allowing ourselves to be an introvert and still do the things that we want to do in the world. Networking something, physical networking something I just don't do a lot of. I'd probably be a lot more successful if I did, but because I'm an introvert, it's just too exhausting to be going here, there, and everywhere. It's just not something that I enjoy doing. So I use the internet more than anything.
Mm-hmm. That's really true. And then the thing I also found with going back to the time concept, and this is an example you can use with other forms of magic, is one of the things that I find is because I respect my time, I respect other people's time, and I show up on time. Obviously you're late sometimes. I don't make excuses. And one of the things, I notice this in a lot of things, is that if you don't respect whatever it is you want, it's not going to happen. And, whether it's like you want someone to listen to you, but you never listen to anybody else, and that seems to be something that helps maintain my freedom, is I respect other people's time, and I also expect them to respect my time. So one of the things I don't allow is I really don't allow a lot of people in my life that waste my time. Even if I lose a client, I just can't do it. It's just against my principle of how I'd see time. And it seems to be we all have certain values that are super important to us, even magically.
Absolutely. That's something, learning to value your time, I think, is the most important thing, because it is your most important resource. And a lot of people who don't perhaps value their own time don't value other people's time. And you do come across this, of course, when you do work with people out there, because there's a lot of people who want your time, but they don't want to, do any sort of exchange in order to have that time. And it's because they don't value time. They don't understand or respect somebody's time, because they probably don't respect necessarily their own time either. And that's why they're probably in the situation in the first place that they're in.
Yeah, and then it comes back to the whole earlier thought that a lot of this is inner work of what, even with prosperity, though it seems to me sometimes, at least for me around prosperity, I sometimes find there are some areas I seem to have, I'm still unconscious why it's happening or what is, and I wonder if maybe just hypnosis would be good for things you just don't understand, but you see it play out, like a certain aspect. Like for instance, I'll get out of debt and then I'll get back into it a little bit again. And I know I'm not that bad compared to, but I'd like to be completely debt free for the rest of my life. That's because it just is less stressful. And so I think, well, there must be something, I don't know what it is. And I'm wondering, like, for areas that you know that it's not quite happening, would it be better to do something like hypnotherapy or tapping, or instead of the spell work or ritual?
Absolutely. I can vouch for that. The inner work, the going in and finding out and the reprogramming, is essential. If there's an area of magic that you really struggle with, it's because there's mindset blocks there in the way, and they can be really good at hiding from you, because there can be layers of them under layers under layers. It's like peeling an onion. And for prosperity, for example, there are so many beliefs that you can have about yourself, about money, prosperity, spirituality, and the world around you that can be putting you into that debt cycle. It could be a loyalty vow to a parent or a rebellion vow to a parent. It could be a sense of anger at the world or entitlement. It can be any of those things that come out of these beliefs that we have in our subconscious mind. And hypnotherapy is, I like to use hypnotherapy as a reinforcement. So I will listen to hypnotherapy audios to reinforce the things I want to be and to believe. And I use the tapping to find them and then to release them.
So how would you find with tapping what a belief is? So what would you do to go about starting that?
I just start with tapping on what I'm feeling and then talk to myself. So it's like having a tapping rant. So it's like you start tapping on the points and you're just starting to, you know, have this rant about, you know, here I am in debt again, for example. Here I am in debt again. Why am I always in debt? You know, why do I come back to a debt even when I've paid it? What is it about? And you, as you tap, because you're calming the amygdala down in the brain and you're bringing yourself down into a calm state, your subconscious mind's able to talk to you then, and you're listening to it. And you start to follow the prompts your subconscious mind's giving you, and you start to realize, oh, I do this because of this, or oh, I believe this, or yeah, I really feel that I just want to. For example, I had a loyalty vow to my mother, so I would not allow myself to be past a certain limit in regards to success or finance, because I felt that if I did, I would be somehow being disloyal to her. So I had to work with that belief and change that. You can have a rebellion vow to a parent, particularly if it's a way that a parent maybe handled money or their view on money. They might have been really greedy, for example, and hoarded money and wouldn't, you know, give money. And so you may have a rebellion vow against that, and you may say, well, I'm never going to be like that with money. And then you end up going through these cycles of spending a lot, not having any. There's all of these things that can be going on with money. That shadow work's really the only thing that can bring it out.
So once you find that you figured out the belief or what's going on, do you do something more? Like, do you, there's some people say you can change a belief in, like, I don't know, 21 days or a full lunar cycle. Do you then do something to replace that particular belief?
What I do is I use EFT and I use reframing with the EFT. So there's a particular release technique that I do to release the belief from my mother and father, my ancestors, my DNA, cellular body, past lives, present life, all time and space. And then I go through and I use this technique of putting the what if in front of whatever the belief is that I want to adopt. So it might be, if I had the loyalty vow for my mother, for example, I might have had the belief is it's not safe to be more successful than my mother. Okay. And often that's what it comes down to. It doesn't feel safe to have something. Our ego is stopping us from having the prosperity because it doesn't feel safe having it. So that might be the belief. So then I would go, well, what if I can be more successful than my mother and be safe at the same time, and use the tapping to tap that into my body. And it's amazing how quick that works. It's you only need to be tapping on that what if for maybe 3 minutes, and there is a pattern interrupt between the mind and the body, and that belief goes. So it doesn't have to take the 21 days if you know exactly what the belief is and you use the tapping.
And you, do you tap in certain areas for certain things? I know you have some tapping on your YouTube, right? Some, a whole, is it part of the Mystery Witch School, or is it a separate one, the tapping?
I've got a tapping channel. So it's Sandra Inman Tapping. So it's totally tapping, because I started off tapping before I started Mystery Witch School. So that channel goes way back to about, I think, 2016, when I was doing the money mindset tapping work. And so there's a lot of money mindset stuff on there and a lot of tapping on money stuff there, and all sorts of different beliefs that I put there over the years. So very early videos of me there with the tapping. Yes, so we've got the tapping channel. It and does, some people may find that a lot of stuff on there could be quite helpful.
It does make sense, the body-mind connection, if you work with it together, being faster. I only learned about tapping, I think, through you, actually. I don't know if I, maybe I've heard about it, but I'd never met anybody that had done a lot of, at least they, I didn't know they'd done a lot of tapping. So it's really fascinating. And I see it now sometimes in this Qigong video I follow. Sometimes she does some tapping as part of Qigong. And ooh. one is like at the top of the head, and it's to get out of your head. And oh my God, it works like in 2 seconds. I couldn't believe it.
It does. It works quite fast. It really calms the nervous system down. Dawson Church of the EFT universe has done a lot of research into EFT. So they do know that the acupressure points themselves do on fMRI do calm the amygdala down. And there seems to be a connection between calming the amygdala down in the brain and creating that relaxed state and being able to communicate with the subconscious mind. That's where hypnotherapy sort of comes in and why hypnotherapy is so powerful. So EFT is kind of putting yourself into a slight trance so that you can listen to your subconscious mind because it wants to be heard. And if you don't listen to it, it's going to yell even louder and louder. And so what I found with EFT, although originally I came to it because of anxiety issues and a more of emotional issues, I found it for me personally to be the most helpful on the thinking and thought level. So it disconnects the thought from the feeling. And so you start to feel different and then you develop a new thought. And so it's like this cycle of the mind or the thought informing the body, the nervous system, and you have an emotion. But when you calm the nervous system down in relation to the thought, you then end up changing the thought. Mm-hmm. So it's like this mind, body, body, mind thing. And it's as if the subconscious mind is the nervous system.
I love that. Now, but we're getting closer to the end. So I did want to give a shout out to you have a tarot course coming up starting May 31st in Australian time. Correct? Do you want to share a couple things about it?
Yes, yeah, so I've just started. It's called the Confident Tarot Reader. So it is a course, a complete tarot course to basically help people who want to become confident at reading tarot using both the knowledge that we learn from the books and also using the intuition. So finding ways to be able to connect, basically connect to the cards and read the cards actually in a spread rather than just knowing the meanings and then trying to fumble through, well, what does that card mean now that it's sitting there in the Celtic cross? I have no idea. And getting a bit deer in the headlights about it. It's there to teach people how to connect to the cards and their intuition so that you can read on an intuitive level in a confident way. So that starts on the 31st of May. That's Australian time. In the US, it's the 30th of May. And it will be live over Zoom. So every 2 weeks, there'll be a live Zoom lesson. If you can't make the Zooms, that's fine. Most people probably won't. So there's replays there of the Zoom calls. So it's pretty much you can join in, or if you just want to do DIY, you have that option as well.
And how long is the course?
The course has got 7 modules. So over, if it's done every fortnight, every 2 weeks, it takes about 4 months.
Excellent. And so you can find all of that out at mysterywitchschool.com. Is that the best
That's
place?
That's right.
And yeah, there's a lot of other good things on your website and your YouTube channel too. So you've been at this for a little while as a teacher.
Yeah, I started out with the Mystery Witch School 101 Academy course, which is the 12-month course in eclectic Wicca and witchcraft. And then because of my strong interest in shadow work and the use of EFT and the hypnotherapy, I created the Wheels of Empowerment course, which works with the chakras and also with the mindset so that you learn what your beliefs are at each chakra level that are holding you back. And particularly when it comes to prosperity, we're really looking at the root chakra and the sacral chakra. But every chakra can be involved with beliefs around money and prosperity that can be holding you back. Like the crown chakra, for example, is the chakra that you work with your beliefs about spirituality and spirit. So if you have that belief that the gods don't want me to be prosperous, or it's you know, the god and goddess don't want Wiccans to focus on money, that's sitting up there in the crown chakra, blocking your ability to be able to receive that prosperity. So that's how I work with the shadow work. And now we've got the tarot course.
Well, that's, I love that, working with the different chakras too, because I think you're absolutely right about that. It isn't just the lower chakras too, and it's a really good point. I think we're running out of time. I did want to give a thank you to eponymous Jeff and Mac for chatting there with Michael. And thank you, Sandra, again, for all your great information. It's always so interesting where our conversations go.
Yeah, they go all sorts of places, don't they?
So, and we'll have you back, I'm sure, at another point. Hopefully, we're going to do another magic special, too. So we hope you'll join us with that.
Awesome. That'd be wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And thank you all for listening in. Join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together. Have a magical week.